Chapter 19. Laith, Kalin, and Watson sat in wooden chairs around a small kitchen table in Watson's modest home. The fractured banquet hall, visible from the kitchen window, cast a long shadow as the sun drooped westward. "More tea?" Watson offered. Laith shook his head. Kalin lifted her cup.
"Where is Levi?" she asked as Watson poured. "He should be here. We could use his weapon about now. He makes it so much easier to trust the ruler. And I'm sure he needs us, too. I think he took the hall collapse harder than anyone."
"His faith is strong," said Watson, "but uninformed. He has no categories through which to process all that has happened. I must say," he added, "my own grasp of the matter is..." He set his cup on the table and stared into it. "Inadequate." Laith shifted in his chair.
"It's like Levi said in the battle. The ruler can be trusted. Period. Trusting only when things make sense ain't trusting."
He spoke as a man trying to convince himself of his own words. He sighed, leaned back in his chair, and peered out the window toward the hall. In times like this, Levi wanted to be alone. In truth, he preferred solitude most of the time. His hike into the hills north of the hall proved rigorous. At the top of the ridge, just west of the clearing where he'd spent that first night with his new friends, he picked a spot overlooking the valley to the east and the banquet halls and cottage to the south. Grateful for the seclusion, he reclined against a log to take in the view and sort his chaotic thoughts. He had not yet visited the map room in the cottage where the plans and strategies of the ruler were on display. He had heard bits and pieces, but what he just witnessed seemed exactly opposite of what he understood the ruler's plans to be. The ruler's purposes revolved around the banquet halls. If he had the power to prevent it, why would he allow one of his best halls to be destroyed? His swirling confusion about the hall commingled with his deepening sorrow over Abigail. His heart ached for her, certain she would never fully recover. The rescue from the orchard had turned out to be far less than what he had imagined.
"Mind if I join you?"
Startled, Levi turned and tried not to stare. Before him stood the smallest adult Levi had ever seen, no more than 4 feet, if that. Yet he carried himself with the confidence of a great man. The stranger extended his hand.
"I'm Dr. Jensen."
"Levi." He shook the man's tiny hand without standing up. So much for solitude.
"I don't often run into anyone up here,"
Jensen said. It was true. There wasn't much of anything north of the banquet halls, so this spot wasn't on the way to anywhere. If someone came here, it was because he liked to climb, was lost, or wanted to be alone. This man obviously wasn't seeking solitude, and seemed to know the place. Must be a climber.
"So, what brings you up here?"
Jensen asked. "Just needed to get away. I've had a rough couple of weeks." Levi picked up a pine cone and, resting his forearms on his knees, began dismantling it piece by piece. "A friend was trapped in the orchard, and a group of us went to rescue her."
"I take it she wouldn't leave?"
"We got her out." Levi bit his bottom lip as he tugged at an especially stubborn scale on the cone. It broke free, and he flicked it skyward. It rose, stalled, then plummeted downward into a rock pile below. "Thing is, she's different now. She used to be a really happy person, but now she's so down on herself. I don't know what to do."
"That's tough,"
Jensen acknowledged, taking a seat beside Levi.
"I know exactly what that's like. I went through the same thing myself not long ago."
Levite, Levi's guardian, gripped his sword when he saw Dr. Jensen approach, empowered by one of Adramalek's lieutenants.
"Lucius!"
A stench wafted from behind him, and Levite spun. 4 more warriors. He didn't know them, but he guessed they were also high-ranking warriors, each the size of Lucius or larger. Surrounded, Levi turned slowly, every fiber of his being tensed. Lucius himself would have been a handful, but four lieutenants at once? At first, Levite was surprised that such a force would be sent against a man like Levi. But then again, he glanced at Levi's face, the face of a man racked by compassion for Abigail. The combination of faith and compassion posed a threat that attracted attention at the highest levels. Clearly, the prince had not given up on Abigail, and anyone who might have a hand in her restoration remained in his crosshairs. If Lucius' presence was surprising, his strategy was anything but. The same age-old tactic. In a time of sorrow, isolate and deceive. And if the subject's faith can't be shaken, misdirect it through confusion and deception, trapping him in a stronghold. Lucius' specialty. "You went through the same thing? Past tense?" Levi asked. "Sounds like you recovered. How did you do it?"
"There were a number of factors, but I think the biggest was learning to forgive myself."
Unseen by the men, a stone wall formed behind Levi.
As Dr. Jensen spoke, the wall grew, rising to the height of the treetops,
with a thickness the span of a man's outstretched arms.
Then steel plating grew out of the ground and overlaid the wall on both sides. Levite had seen this stronghold before. He drew himself to his full height and raised his sword. Normally, he wouldn't consider this a winnable fight, but allowing Levi to be imprisoned in the self-love stronghold? He would be cut to pieces before letting that happen. Lucius shouted at Dr. Jensen,
"Keep talking about self-forgiveness. Make him believe Abigail can absolve herself. Keep his focus off the father."
The wall began to curve around Levi, now behind and on both sides. Levite flew to take hold of Levi and pull him out before the wall closed him in completely. But Lucius' blow came so fast, Levite didn't see it coming. It caught the side of his helmet and sent him reeling. He recovered, and Lucius lowered his sword, daring a counterstrike.
Levite rushed Lucius, causing him to step back and brace for the collision. But at the last second, Levite cut sideways to Levi's side and whispered in his ear.
Levi looked up from his pine cone.
"You forgave yourself? How does absolving yourself restore a broken relationship with the father?"
Jensen stared blankly, as if it had never occurred to him that forgiveness was the restoration of a relationship. "Understandable," Levi thought. "Guess I never realized what forgiveness was before the cottage either." Jensen tried again.
My point is that the father isn't angry. He is full of love and compassion, not anger or revenge. I came out of my depression when I realized what I thought was the father's anger was just me, angry at myself. The father never gets angry with us."
"You speak as though you know the father personally."
"Know him? Oh, well,
Levi continued.
"When you say the father never gets angry, are you saying he gives commands but doesn't care if we obey them?"
Jensen straightened his shirt.
"I'm just saying it's the mountain people, not the father, who get uptight about eating fruit. Why would the father care if someone nibbles an orange? How does that hurt him? He wants us to be happy, and if it takes a little fruit here and there for me to be happy, the father understands. What he wants to protect us from is not fruit, it's unhappiness and low self-esteem."
All four warriors seized Levite and threw him backward. Then one blocked the stronghold opening, which was collapsing by the second, while the other three pinned Levite to the ground. Lucius clamped his huge hand around Levite's throat.
Levite pulled at Lucius' fingers, but the battle-hardened spirit only grinned and gripped even tighter.
Levite slammed the butt of his sword against Lucius' face twice, but the other two warriors took hold of his arm and twisted the sword out of his grasp. Levite shouted,
"Remember the mirror room!"
Levi tilted his head.
Self-esteem? When I had high esteem for myself, that's when I was at my worst. But when the ruler took me through the cottage, he showed me real life and joy came through esteeming him more highly, and esteeming others more than myself.
Ah, yes, it is important to love others. But you can never love others properly until you learn to love yourself. That's what the ruler meant when he said, love your neighbor as yourself.
Lucius laid a dagger at Levite's throat and grinned. But a blow from behind struck Lucius in the side and he folded. The other two warriors left Levite and rose to face the newcomer. Levite smiled. There was no mistaking the ring of Big Red's sword. And between him and the warriors stood not only Big Red, but Saul and Kalion as well.
Hi, guys.
Levi stood to meet Laith, Watson, and Kalion. He was glad to see them, unusually glad. He felt something like relief, which was strange. It wasn't like the little guy was any threat. With the sideways tip of his head, he said,
This is
Dr. Jensen, Watson said.
Oh, you've met. Watson's tone was grim.
He is the leader of the Little Ones.
Watson faced Jensen.
I couldn't help overhearing your theory about how the command to love others is really a command to love ourselves. Tell me, if that's the case, how is it that selfish people commit murder?
Or leave their wives for another woman, Kalion added. Wasn't it you who counseled Alexander to leave me because the father wanted him to be happy? He did a great job loving himself, but was he loving me?
No one needs to learn self-love, Watson added. People already love themselves. We are born that way.
A lot of people hate themselves,
Jensen objected.
It may feel that way, Watson said. However, even in times of self-loathing or self-harm, there is no one you serve, protect, or feel more pity for than yourself.
Levi stood and took a step forward.
Yeah, that's how it was for me. I hurt a lot of people when I was looking out for number one.
Just as Levi stood and, with a nudge from his guardian, stepped forward, the two ends of the circular wall met, sealing the enclosure and missing Levi by inches. Lucius cursed and barked an order at the others.
Guard the stronghold!
But Watson kept pounding at it.
Loving the father and others is only possible when we disregard the esteem we have for ourselves. To follow the ruler, one must deny himself, not love himself.
A large crack spiderwebbed along one side of the fortress, and the structure tilted to one side. Laith joined the assault. He couldn't see the growing prison cell threatening to entrap Levi, but was well aware of the danger of spiritual strongholds. He lifted a massive cottage piece and hurled it at the stronghold, reciting the inscription as he threw it.
Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others more important than yourselves. Love is not self-seeking.
Watson turned to Levi.
Abigail's sorrow is appropriate.
The ruler taught us that when we do evil, we must rend our hearts.
We should grieve, mourn, and wail, and change our laughter to mourning and our joy to gloom.
Never had Levite seen the self-love stronghold reduced so quickly to a pile of rubble. Dr. Jensen gasped and looked up, then to all sides. He held his arms out in defense against an invisible threat.
What was that?
What was what?
Levi said.
You didn't feel it? It was like the air. It moved.
Lucius' face turned white. The other three warriors nearly trampled one another in their panicked retreat. Lucius also backed away, shouting at Jensen.
Get out now! Run! You're not safe! Run!
Jensen's alarm melted to a look of sadness.
"Hey," said Kalin, pointing at the ground beneath Jensen. "Look."
Lathe and Watson smiled. Levi gazed in astonishment at Jensen's feet, which spanned at least an inch longer than the tracks he'd left on his approach. Kalin stepped close to Dr. Jensen and gently lifted his chin with her fingers.
"What you're feeling is good. It's the kind of sorrow that pushes you toward life instead of death. It's the early stages of humility. I know you don't believe in the Great Wind, but why not come with us to the cottage? You can meet the ruler, hear him out, and decide for yourself."
Jensen stood silent for a long moment. The corners of his mouth crept upward, then reversed into a frown. He lifted his eyes and opened his mouth, but closed it before speaking. Wrinkles overtook his forehead, then smoothed. His gaze clouded.
I don't think so.
With that, he set out down the eastward path. Kalin stood motionless for a full 2 minutes, watching him.
"I don't think he's coming back, Kalin," Lathe said.
"But he felt the wind," she said,
still not taking her eyes off Jensen.
"It's Jensen," Lathe said. "He's not going to..."
"Just..."
She put up a hand toward Lathe and kept watching.
"Come on,"
she whispered, as if Jensen would somehow sense her call.
"You know something's happening inside you. Just stop and come back."
Finally, he disappeared from sight. Kalin wiped a lone tear from her eye and faced her friends.
"It will be dark soon. We should probably head back down."
"I'm ready," Levi said.
Lathe nudged Levi as they started down the trail.
"What were you doing up here anyway?"
"I don't know. He shook his head. "Did Abigail make it back? How's she doing?"
"She is..." Watson cleared his throat. "It's hard for her."
"You're her brother," Levi said. "Surely you know what it would take to cheer her up.
We have to do something."
"We do indeed. But cheer is not what she needs right now. Do you remember when you crawled out of the mirror room in the cottage?"
"How do you know I crawled? I never told..."
Watson smiled. "Everyone crawls. It is the only way out of the room. Anyone so proud as to remain standing must stay until their knees finally give way."
"So what? You're saying Abigail's going to have to go in there and look in the mirrors before facing the father?"
"Not if she is already humble and broken. That is why her sorrow now is a good thing. But we must be careful. The prince will endeavor to use her sorrow against her by turning it into the sorrow that leads to death, rather than the kind that will drive her to the father. We must keep her focus on the promise room so she does not lose heart."
Levi had mixed memories of the floorless promise room. On one hand, he recalled the comfort, rest, hope, and joy he experienced there. But just as vivid was the image of a woman plummeting into the bottomless abyss when she refused to trust the ruler.
"Promise room is great if you can make it through," Levi said.
"But what if Abigail's not up to it?"
"It is never a question of ability, only willingness. When people do not receive what is promised, it is not because the bar is so high that they are unable to meet it, but because it is so low that they are unwilling. Humility is agonizing to the proud heart."
"Makes sense," Levi said. "But I still hate seeing her like this. She's miserable. I just want her to feel a little better about herself."
"True repentance is excruciating, but nothing like the misery that falls upon the unrepentant. The only path to joy is to return to the giver of joy, and that path must cross the valley of contrition. What Abigail needs is to see the Father's colors. I assure you, feeling good about the Father feels better than feeling good about oneself. The dilapidated hall loomed before Abigail like a warehouse of shame.
I can't go in there. I can't face these people after what I've done. And the way I look, I can't.
She turned away, but Adam held her.
Your friends are in there. Laith and Kalen risked their lives for you. So did Levi, and he hardly knows you. They came for me when the ruler sent them. But when they saw me, they all felt the same thing. Disgust. I saw it in their eyes. I even see it in yours sometimes.
No, you don't. Never for a single moment. Every glimpse of you only deepens my love for you. He pointed to the door. And I know there are plenty of others in there who will be thrilled to see you.
Eyes downcast, Abigail was reminded of the worst of her deformities. Her feet. They had withered to the size of a lowlander's feet, and the putrid stains of the orchard could be seen through the holes in her shoes. She covered one foot with the other and lifted her face back to Adam, hoping his gaze hadn't followed hers.
Adam, you don't understand. I have nothing to offer anymore. I used to bring people joy, but now...
She shook her head.
You feel colorless? She covered her face and nodded.
The colors you had before, where did you get them?
She looked toward the hall.
So the only thing you ever had to offer was what the ruler gave you?
Again, she gave a silent nod.
So if you want to have something to offer, and the source of all colors is in that hall, isn't that where you need to be?
He moved close and caressed her cheek.
You will find your joy again.
He took her face in both hands.
The ruler designed you to wear that smile. He wants to see it again even more than I do, which is saying something.
I know I need the ruler, she said. But I can't be around people right now. Let me just go to the cottage and meet with him there.
But isn't it through his people that the ruler dispenses his love? And isn't it through loving them that you receive the most joy? If you want your smile back, I don't see any other way.
He pointed to the entrance.
Everything you need is in there. The ruler, his food, his family.
And wolves, she added. What if they...
Even if there are wolves, if the ruler is there, and it's where he serves his food, where else can you go?
He took a step toward the door and held out a hand to her.
Any wolf that wants to bite you will have to go through me first.
She drew a deep breath, wiped her eyes, and took his hand. He pushed the door open, and they stepped into the hall.